This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Mass evacuations underway ahead of Hurricane Milton's arrival this week. It's now a Category 4 storm with winds of 155 miles an hour. ABC's Victor Oquendo is in Sarasota, where people are trying to get to safer ground.
It is hard to find, but this gas station in Sarasota, they still have some fuel left. They tell me they fully expect to run out today, and they aren't sure when the next shipment is coming. They also called Monday a record day. Now, you will definitely see those long lines at gas stations throughout Florida. Officials say currently there is no fuel shortage and more is on the way.
Milton is expected to make landfall tomorrow night or early Thursday. The Israeli military says it has killed a senior Hezbollah commander in a strike on Beirut, the militant group's acting leader promising more fighting against Israeli troops in southern Lebanon. Vice President Harris appearing on 60 Minutes, insisting despite Republican opposition, if she is elected, she could get her economic proposals through Congress. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden returns to Wisconsin today. He's talking about his administration's progress in replacing lead pipes in Milwaukee and creating good-paying jobs. It's Biden's second visit to Wisconsin since dropping out of the presidential race. He was here in September to talk about new investments in rural electrification and other infrastructure. The nation's agriculture secretary says Liz Cheney's endorsement to Wisconsin last week sends a message to Republicans thinking of voting for Kamala Harris in order to preserve democracy.
That is a very stark choice. And as a Republican, you can feel confident that you're doing what is right for the country by casting your vote for the vice president.
That's Tom Vilsack speaking to Civic Media's Todd Albaugh. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Kuska. The Cooley region will be receiving millions of dollars in federal grants that will go towards renovating or creating new library spaces. La Crosse is getting over $3 million to expand its library, while Mauston will get $2.8 million for the same purpose. Independence and Alma are each receiving over $4 million to build brand new community learning centers and public libraries. The grants are from the America Rescue Plan Act, and $115 million in total are being distributed to 35 different places in Wisconsin. 17 residents displaced by a fire at an assisted living facility in La Crescent Saturday afternoon have temporary housing. The residents have been moved into care facilities in La Crescent and La Crosse. According to fire officials, dry, windy conditions caused the fire Saturday afternoon to spread to the entire building. Crews from six departments, including two from Wisconsin, worked to put out the fire. Nobody was hurt in the fire. Several organizations, including the Red Cross, are helping residents with the transition to temporary housing.
A Badger named Player of the Week.
Hi,
I'm Mike Clemens with sports, college football. Wisconsin Badgers Trek Kekahuna named Big Ten Freshman of the Week. Six catches and two touchdowns against Purdue. Head coach Luke Fickell says running back Tywee Walker looked good as the game wore on.
It gave Tywee an opportunity probably to truly kind of see what he can establish, you know, and even, you know, being physical at that. I think those kinds of guys do gain momentum after taking hits.
NFL, the Green Bay Packers host the Arizona Cardinals Sunday. Matt LaFleur says he expects Romeo Dobbs will be back after meeting with the suspended wide receiver yesterday. Jair Alexander says Dobbs is one of their best receivers.
I always want to go against Dobbs. I mean, dude's freaking really good. I mean, he come in his rookie year not catching a single pass on me, and now he's in contested. We're going up for 50-50 balls now. I mean, he's a pro. You know, he goes about it the right way. He comes in, I mean, he catches 100 balls, just more after practice. His attention to detail is very on point.
That's the Packers' Jair Alexander. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 60s to low 70s this afternoon. The wind will be out of the northwest at around 5 to 10. Tonight, clear with a low in the lower 40s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the low to mid 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on the talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490 AM WLCX and on the Civic Media app.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Earl Ingram Jr. joins us at 10:33. Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review at 11. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. The one and only Sandy Williams is back.
Yeah, he's back. We missed him on Friday.
Like an old penny. Just keeps showing up in your pocket.
Hey, it's Tuesday, and that means my co-host Sandy Williams has returned.
I have returned. I was in San Francisco. I didn't leave my heart there.
Well, let me ask you, because I haven't been to San Francisco, but I've been reading a lot in conservative newspapers and others, and San Francisco is a hellhole.
Well, it isn't a hellhole, but I will tell you that very expensive residential costs there have caught up with San Francisco. And I was talking to vendors and talking to people who live in San Francisco. And so the pandemic, which created the opportunity for virtual work, caused lots of people in San Francisco and California was sort of the center of virtual work in it anyway. So virtual working took people out of the downtown so that they weren't coming downtown to work anymore. And the offices are now empty. You know, they're not what they used to be, and because virtual work has continued, only some places have insisted that people come back to work. But many people not only stopped coming to the office in San Francisco, but they sought cheaper housing because everyone knew that San Francisco was the highest priced housing market in the country. And it was pricing itself out of reach for many, many workers. And many workers resorted then to moving from San Francisco, working virtually for their San Francisco employer. And it's had a serious effect on downtown San Francisco. I did not see all of the homelessness and drugs, you know, the stuff that people are talking about, like all of those horrors. But it is true that Union Square, the famous Union Square that has all this big-time shopping there, finds many of the big department stores closing, just like they are all around the country. That started happening there, too. So, you know, whereas many cities are reviving, I think San Francisco got too far ahead of the curve on the cost of housing. And magnificent place that it is, you know, it's going to take a while, I think, for its housing costs to get into range such that it rebounds.
You know, when you talk about housing costs, and they talk about that in this nation, it's not as if you just snap your finger and all of a sudden housing costs comes into affordability.
Well, it's you know, supply and demand, number one. But number two, rents come down slowly. They don't come down quickly. Rents go up rather quickly when they can. You know, this is not something that's the result of inflation. This is the result of long-term trends as well as a big outgrowth of the pandemic. I'm sure during the pandemic, they did have quite a bit of homelessness. I mean, one of the problems for places that are seasonably warm all year round is homelessness. I mean, it is, you know, it's harder to be homeless in Milwaukee than right. it is to be homeless in San Francisco. And I know this because I had a sad story of a friend who actually became homeless. I talked to him later, and he said he actually moved to San Diego because he knew he was homeless.
So let me ask you, Sandy, when you look at all of those spectacular skyline of San Francisco, and like I said, I haven't seen it in person, but I've seen it, and you look at all of that, and certainly the people who own those luxurious office buildings and all of that, they're struggling financially.
Oh yeah,
I mean, you know how what happens. You can't allow that to.
Well,
buildings have to be kept up. What?
Well, the nation is worried. I mean, the national economy is to some extent worried about commercial real estate because the effect of the pandemic and virtual work was to substantially reduce the occupancy rate, the square footage requirements per employee. For commercial space went down materially. Many places resorted to having, instead of an office for somebody, they called this motel concept where people have an office they can use, but it's not their office because they're only there 3 days a week, and they sort of move in and out of offices that are available to them. That significantly reduces the square footage requirement for, you know, let's say a company has 3,000 employees.
Right.
They used to need X thousand square feet for that. Now they need X, maybe X over two, half of that for that same number of employees, which reduces the demand for commercial real estate, which is already in existence. So, you know, there is a concern in many cities. Milwaukee and Wisconsin, I'm sure, has the same situation right. around many of the towns.
So when you talk about the demand for commercial real estate, Sandy, contrast that, and it's now in a tough situation, as you're stating, does that have impact on everything else in the country?
Well, people invest, you know, there's a lot of money that's invested in commercial
right.
real estate. And if those loans go bad, which is the worry, you know, that people who own buildings that become, lose their demand for their space, those owners go bankrupt. This happened to the 100 East building in Milwaukee not so long ago. So that bankruptcy has impacts on the financial community if that becomes a widespread phenomenon. But what's interesting to watch is the fact that we have a substantial shortage of residential living units, and we have a surplus of commercial units. And we're seeing in many cities commercial buildings that are being converted to residential buildings.
Right.
And so, you know, the commercial real estate marketplace is trying to adjust to the situation. And ultimately, it will happen. But real estate doesn't happen overnight. You know, it takes a while to build a building. It takes a while to change the configuration of a building. So, you know, it's a business cycle that has a little bit of a longer sine wave.
So let me ask you again, because, you know, you always make me think with your answers. So you look at all of these spectacular buildings that once housed corporations and companies and all of that, and people worked in those facilities. They made good money.
Yeah.
When they take those people away, they can't afford to live in those extravagant places anymore.
The people that most of the changes now are the result of virtual work.
Right.
Okay. So these people,
which
are still
is not going away,
they're still working and still earning money. Many businesses are trying to reduce the amount of virtual work that is ongoing. Many companies are realizing that interfacing with one another is an important part of the creative process that's involved with their business. It's a big part of the effective activity that's required of a team in a business environment. So, you know, there's a trend that's moving away from so much virtual work, and particularly in the situation where businesses are no longer experiencing a shortage of the kind of workers they need. Workers have had a great deal of leverage, and they've been actually able to sort of demand the right to work virtually. As they lose that leverage, their ability to demand virtual work is going to diminish. A part of the virtual work attractiveness was the avoidance of child daycare costs, right? So that if you can work virtually, one or the other of a team of a couple that has children, you can work it out so you don't need child daycare, which is, for a couple of kids, could cost $30,000 a year.
The flip side of that is you look at a corporation like Northwest Mutual in Milwaukee,
right,
that is doing the exact opposite. They're building a campus.
Well, what's happened actually truthfully there, and Northwestern Mutual has said this in what they put out, they built that beautiful new all-glass building downtown, and have now it is not fully occupied. The new campus they're building is actually replacing a building in Franklin, a big they have in Franklin.
Right.
They're moving people, and I think they're actually going to they're going to reduce the number of square feet that they have committed to by all of that space that they had in Franklin is being shut down.
Right.
And what they're doing in downtown is renovating an existing building. So they're not increasing the square footage by anything like the amount of square footage they're reducing by moving out of that campus in Franklin.
So I guess I was under the assumption, and I have forgotten that that's one of the reasons they were doing it, but and I thought they were doing it in contrast to many of the other people who think that, you know, people working from home is the answer.
Well, I think, you know,
because some companies are demanding that the people come back now.
Well, to its credit, in Milwaukee, a great deal of the employers in Milwaukee are realizing the benefit of locating their facilities in downtown Milwaukee, because not only is it attractive to workers to work on teams creatively with one another, but it's also much more attractive to workers to work in an urban center where there are places to go to lunch.
Yeah, beautiful.
Places to go out for a walk around it, you know.
Safe.
So you're in a safe, but also an interesting and hospitable environment that is socialized,
right,
and not isolated.
Yeah, and so you, I was reading, saw something the other day. Milwaukee is considered one of the top cities in the United States.
Yeah, Milwaukee is. You know, I think
that blew my mind.
Well, it's got so many advantages. So you don't have to go to many cities and sit in your car in traffic very long to realize that we have a huge advantage with respect to convenience. You can live outside the city and get into the city to work very easily. Milwaukee has this changing environment downtown. Many people are choosing to live downtown. The Milwaukee River has become a beautiful resource.
They're getting ready to expand it.
Yeah. I mean, there's beautiful apartments under construction right now. That there's more on the way, and they have the river walkway that's soon going to go the entire length of the urban part of the river.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, a lot to talk about this morning with Sandy Williams. Always good to have him in. Good to have him back. So Sandy, when we come back, I need you to explain to those of us who struggle sometimes with all this legalese. Elon Musk, his pact is talking about giving $47.
It's an interesting number, isn't it?
Yeah, I wonder where he got that.
Yeah, it's going to require a change in your pocket kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, for people who are going to...
Oh, I know why 47. President number 47.
Oh. All right. Yeah, that's why Sandy Williams is here.
Wow.
855-752-4842 is Tuesday, and my co-host Sandy Williams is back.
Eagle 1490 AM. The Todd Alba Show.
This narrative that the immigrants are coming to get you, that's fiction. Look at criminal charges in your community. And look how many of those people who have been there for years, if not decades, and how many of those people are new immigrants. And even a smaller percentage of how many are undocumented immigrants. It's not happening. It would be like going to places and say, well, you know what? I'm running for Congress to stop the zombies.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes, that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing. So what do? We get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes, just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
The vice presidential debate. Mike from Kenosha is on the line.
Isn't it the whole purpose of a debate to be on television for the public benefit? The narrative, questions, fact-checking, it's inconsistent at best.
You're absolutely right, Mike. Mainstream media is bailing massively by trying to both sides everything and sane wash everything.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
That's early Frank Sinatra.
Early Sinatra.
His voice matured.
This is like Tommy Dorsey Band Frank Sinatra.
Keeps raining all the time.
This is a Frank Sinatra you and I never heard.
Well, I remember hearing this in, you know, I'm a aficionado of old 40s movies.
Yeah, this is like from a movie.
I'm pretty sure that I saw him singing one of the old movies. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is my co-host is Sandy Williams. And Sandy, You're trotting out Frank Sinatra.
Well, I'm trotting out music.
Early Frank
music
Sinatra.
Music about stormy weather because, God, you know, if people don't, you know, in fact, I saw Donald Trump questioning whether we had global climate change because he said, you know, it was kind of cold last year. Well, clearly the intensity of the storms is unbelievable. And we have, after Hurricane Helene, right on the heels, we have Hurricane Milton, whose velocity, and first of all, the rate of intensity and change, it's called, I don't know the exact term, but the rate at which the storms get worse is the result, in many cases, of the change in the climate that has put more moisture in the air, put more heat in the air. And, you know, Milton went from a Category 1 to a Category 5 in something like 24 hours. It's now at Category 4, I think. It's projected to be Category 3 when it lands, but it's going to have a much bigger size than normal as the result. It's apparently going to be horrific.
Well, 15-foot surge. Surge.
Yeah.
And so they were talking about the fact that the land, the heat, the temperature of the land is going to be 85 around there, and that fuels the ferocity.
Right. So, I mean, you know, the combination of, that's the problem I think they're finding out with the global climate change is that there are things that compound on one another that are moving and getting warmer. You know, for instance, the melting of the glaciers seems to be at an accelerating rate because of some compounding issues that relate to things interacting with one another and causing it to happen faster and faster. And so, you know, I think scientists have constantly been decreasing the amount of time they think it's going to take for the global to warm in the manner that they find to be particularly troublesome and dangerous in terms of its effect on the height of water, et cetera.
So, Sandy, let me, because there's so many people pointing the finger at the Biden-Harris, leadership.
What, for causing the storms?
Well, not causing.
But, no, I know, but it's, but to be honest with you, when you have storms like this that are immense, number one, number two, change rapidly, okay? First of all, the people have done a pretty good job of predicting these things, but the fuse they have for the lead time they have is shortened immensely when storms become intense so rapidly as the result of the conditions in the Gulf and the conditions in the climate. And so like Milton sprang up and was very, very rapid in its development. So then the ability to line up all of the emergency equipment and to the emergency response becomes more difficult with the speed and intensity, the speed of development of intense storms. And so has any emergency response ever been perfect? Some have been much less perfect than others, but none of them have been perfect. And there is always a lessons learned process that follows any storm to figure out what we did wrong and what we can do better. I think that people's view of the response to Hurricane Helene was that it was quite good. It's just that the storm was out of bounds.
Well, clearly you haven't been watching Fox News.
Well, I know, but I mean, it's easy after the fact. You know, the fact is that the response to Katrina was abysmal.
Right.
Okay. and President Bush got criticized for it and should have, and FEMA got criticized for it and should have. But furthermore, the level of preparedness of something like FEMA is something that also is something that isn't instantaneous. It builds up over time. It's the result of the expertise in the agency that is the result of the retention of civil servants over time. You know, the very attack of the right on government is the kind of thing that threatens the capacity of something like FEMA to be as competent as it needs to be when we have disasters.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because there's been a really onslaught that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, because of Hurricane Helena, going up as far as it did, North Carolina, Georgia, and up in the mountains, and they haven't gotten there, and they've been blamed for not supporting those people because they're MAGA people. So let me hear that.
Well, I've not heard any of the governors of those states.
No, the governors haven't said that.
Suggested any of that. Okay, I've not heard anything other than third parties trying to attribute problems where the parties on the ground are not making those same accusations. I think they all want aid as rapidly as possible, but I've not heard any governors stand up to criticize the Washington response as being anything less than as rapid as possible, which is about all you can ask for, because there is an as possible element to this ability to line up emergency support.
So when you look at FEMA right now being stretched in dealing with Helena, and now this is coming behind it.
Yeah.
FEMA is not the military. It doesn't have the manpower, correct me if I'm wrong, deal with a second issue when they're still trying to deal with this.
Well, the fact is that Biden's White House did enlist the help of the military and got, I don't know what number of hundreds of military assigned to the process of assisting attempt to save a bunch of potential victims.
All right, 855-752-4842. It is Tuesday, and I mean it's Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. When we come back, we'll talk about Elon Musk and how you can get $47, for registering people to vote.
Listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin is getting $115 million to hook up public libraries and community centers to the internet. 35 communities will benefit from the federal funding. The money is meant to serve disadvantaged populations impacted by the pandemic and who have little to no broadband access. Wisconsin voters can expect to hear more about the future of the U.S. Supreme Court as a presidential campaign issue. Four of the nine justices will soon turn 70.
We are trying to make it clear to voters that when you're voting this year, you're not just voting for a president, you're not just voting for Congress, you're also voting for generations of decisions that will impact you, your family, your children, your grandchildren's fundamental rights.
Joe Hines is with the progressive group Stand Up America. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. A homeless encampment was cleared out by state contracted workers along Rose Street in La Crosse on Monday. The Wisconsin DOT and La Crosse police were on hand to monitor. The encampment was located near a Welcome to La Crosse sign. About 30 people were camping in the area, according to state officials. Last month, the DOT told the people camping there that they needed to move. State law bans camping along public highways. The city of La Crosse banned camping on city-owned property in August. Wisconsin is once again seeing high wildfire risks as dry and breezy conditions are paired with the seasonal drying of vegetation to create hazards across the state. The northern two-thirds of Wisconsin currently are at high or very high fire danger. La Crosse, Monroe, and counties to the north began the day at high fire danger. Everything further south has a moderate risk of wildfires. The DNR said that there have been 23 wildfires across the state just this week and recommended limiting outdoor burning. For WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Attention Bear fans. No, not those kind. The Bear will be back for a season 4, and actress Sarah Paulson, who plays Cousin Michelle on the show, indicated she will be back as well. The actress indicated as much while discussing her new horror film, Hold Your Breath, with the New York Post. Hold Your Breath dropped last Thursday on Hulu to pretty mediocre reviews. The film also stars fellow The Bear cast member and two-time Emmy winner Ebon Moss-Bacharach. Season 4 of The Bear could return as early as 2025. In How Clueless Can You Possibly Be News, a man approached Sean Combs' ex, Young Miami, and asked her to sign a bottle of baby oil. The rapper was sitting in an SUV when the fan approached and asked her through an open window to sign his toiletry. The FBI uncovered thousands of bottles of baby oil from Combs' homes in Miami and Los Angeles earlier this year. The only thing that could make this story even weirder is if it was totally random and the guy had no knowledge of Sean Combs' scandal. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 60s to low 70s this afternoon. The wind will be out of the northwest at around 5 to 10. Tonight, clear with a low in the lower 40s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the low to mid 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Congresswoman Summer Lee.
The American Stability Act doesn't just address the need for raising of the wage. The second thing is that tax reform piece, shifting the burden from the folks who are working class to the not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen so many benefits in this rigged system, and we have to start to unrig it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Madison film critic and CityCast Madison's Rob Thomas and sharing his thoughts on the Joker sequel, the Wisconsin Film Festival's Ben Reiser.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
That sounds like Johnny Cash.
Into this house no. we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
Who?
The Doors.
Oh, The Doors.
Like a dog without a bone and actor of
yeah, Brendan got it. Doors, he got it right away. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with the one and only Sandy Williams, my co-host. Sandy, the music.
Storms. That's pretty self-explanatory. The Florida's being buffeted. People who doubt global climate change ought to understand that the intensity, the rate of increase of intensity and the dollars and cents effect and the human toll of these storms is completely unprecedented. And you can tell it's unprecedented because buildings that have been there for a long, long time are suddenly being damaged terribly. So it didn't happen before, but it's happening now.
So for those of you who didn't see presidential candidate and Vice President Kamala Harris appeared on 60 Minutes last night. You've been hearing she's afraid to show up. She's afraid to be interviewed. She's afraid to answer questions. Well, you don't get any bigger than 60 Minutes, the audience.
Well, and only one person didn't show up.
Yeah. Repeat that, sir.
Only one person didn't show up yeah. for it. And I thought the guy who led into it, his explanation about Trump not showing up was pretty telling, you know.
So for those who say, you know, she's scared, she's hiding, she showed up last night, Sandy, she was asked some tough questions.
Yeah, I read the transcript. I didn't watch the whole thing, but this morning I read and scanned the transcript. And, you know, the guy did a good job of pushing
yes.
to make sure that the questions got answered. But she did answer the questions when pushed. Every politician has the beginning of an answer to every question, which is a talking point based.
Right.
And yes, she probably initiated her response
she
to a number of the
times.
Questions in that fashion. But he pushed, she answered. And I don't think she evaded any of the questions ultimately. And I thought that there was actually a substantial amount of detail that she discussed with respect to the policies. Unlike someone who says, elect me, I'll fix it. She actually talked about the policies that would be aimed at fixing it. And she also talked about the issues that needed fixing with I thought, a fair amount of specificity. So I was pretty impressed, actually, with her presentation. I'm sure the conservative media wants to pick apart whatever it is she said and whatever it is that she didn't say. But I think that any objective observer could read that transcript and see a candidate who had a finger on the issues and also had a knowledge of and her finger on the answers.
855-752-4842. Did you watch the interview of Vice Presidential and President and Presidential Candidate Kamala Harris last night on...
60 Minutes.
You know, Sandy, in listening to her, the guy asked her, well, it's been said that you have been changing your mind and
right.
people don't know you. And she said, well, yeah, as I've traveled around the country and talked to people. Isn't that a good answer?
Well, actually, I think someone who's intransigent in their views is suspect, right? I mean, if every time you make a statement or stake out a position, you're required to be entrenched in that position, why, then there's no process going forward for movement or for rationalization or for conversion to some other better view. I think that politicians should be congratulated to the extent that they seem to flex their position in a manner that is responsive to better public policy and to meet the needs of the people. I think if one did an analysis of her opponent's positions over a lifetime, you'd find someone who had no position that mattered to them at any point during their life. You know, he's flip-flopped on every position. He was a Planned Parenthood advocate, advocate of abortion rights, and then he nominated for justice people who destroyed Roe v. Wade, and he did that purposefully. He's flip-flopped on just about every issue. But my main point with respect to Donald Trump is I've never heard him discuss a policy, okay? I've never heard him discuss a policy. I've heard him describe problems. I've heard him describe with hyperbole and magnification and falsehoods problems. And then I've only heard him say, elect me and I'll solve it. But I've never heard him discuss the policies that are associated with the solution. And if you look at the economics of his policies, you know, $7.5 trillion of debt over the next decade, you know, her policies, yes, have $3 trillion of debt, but she's talking about actually taxing the rich in a way that could eat into the level of that. That $3 trillion is without any increase in taxes. That's an estimate of the cost of her programs, not the revenue that might be generated from other issues.
You know, Sandy, when you say that we're this far into this, election, and have you ever seen a candidate for president of the United States who hasn't given any specifics about anything that they're going to do? I mean, they don't get away with that, right?
No, I mean, Donald Trump not only doesn't give specifics, but to the extent that there's a document out there, Project 2025, which has been generated by his supporters, which describes a whole bunch of things that are going to be accomplished, and he says, no, I have nothing to do with that, okay? And so, he basically has just made promises associated with solving problems, some of which are bogus, the so-called rising crime rate in the country, when in fact we have a falling crime rate, the immigration, which incidentally, she was pushed hard on that immigration issue last night on 60 Minutes,
right,
and talked about the immigration policy, talked about the evolution of the views there, talked about the fact that presentations at the border today are way down. They're down at the level below what they were before 2020. So there is a problem at the border. There was a bipartisan bill to solve it. Donald Trump has never addressed that particular bill other than saying that he didn't like it and he's going to do better. But is he going to do better? That was a bipartisan congressional bill, okay? And the ability of the incumbent president to continue to stifle the border migration, which was premised on an order that was premised on COVID, okay, the Donald Trump embargo was premised on the COVID pandemic, which I had lifted, okay, and so the legal underpinnings for it had lifted. Now, they're continuing, they're in the process now, the Biden White House is, of trying to do whatever they can with executive order to deal with the border, absent the adoption of the bipartisan bill, which was drafted by conservatives and liberals and deep six by Donald Trump.
So, Sandy, we're less than 30 days out. Is there anything that can transpire, in your mind, that can move people who are undecided right now on either side of the equation? Do you think there's...
Well, the polls seem to show that there's continuing movement, so it's small. But the fact is that we're dealing with razor's edge here, apparently, in terms of I think that there is the possibility of the kind of movement that could affect the election. It's not seismic, but it doesn't need to be seismic to affect elections, which in the state of Wisconsin could amount to a margin of 25,000 or 40. Are there 40,000 people undecided in Wisconsin? I'll bet there are.
All right, let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, guys. Appreciate you taking my call, as always. I thought it'd be interesting to add to your discussion this morning the excuses that Donald Trump used to back out of the commitment that he had made prior to be on 60 Minutes. One excuse was he thought Dana Bash was not polite to him, so he wanted an apology. And the other one is he said, well, you guys, you're going to fact check me, and we can't, just like Vance the other day, what are you doing fact checking me? And I thought to myself, and I've said this a couple times on your show, whose election is this? Is it a party? Is it Democrats? Is it Republicans? I mean, whose is it? And I keep on coming up with only one answer, and that answer is it's the people's election. It's not CNN. It's not CBS. It's not Fox News. It's not Donald Trump. It's not the commentators. It's none of theirs. It's the public's election. And I think one of the first things that we need to do in order to gain control of this stuff is accept the fact that this is ours, not theirs, to manipulate and create their own little rules. No. This is the American people's. And that's really who I'm fighting for. We've been getting the short end of the stick for a long, 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 long time. Lying now is normalized within one of the parties. And meanwhile, all this work needs to be done. All these things need to be tended to by, our elected officials. And for whatever reason, they don't feel the ownership or the commitment to do the people's work like I believe they should. So I just wanted to chime in real quick and remind people that those are the two reasons that Donald Trump provided.
Well, Mike, I think it's very well said. Somebody has to apologize to him. So, Sandy, here he gets an opportunity.
Well, and actually, the fellow on the 60 Minutes show at the opening of the show pointed that out and pointed out that he was asking her to apologize for something she didn't do in the prior show based on the transcript of the prior show.
So how can you say that Kamala Harris is afraid? She shows up. She's there. He made a commitment. But he didn't think he was going to be treated fairly. Well, what does that mean? Well, they're going to fact check me.
Well, to me, the notion that someone would not want to be fact checked suggests something about what it is they expect they're going to be saying. You know, fact checking suggests that they're going to be held to some form of reality that they aren't comfortable with.
Well, Sandy, fact-checking means there's a possibility that you aren't going to be totally truthful.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right?
You know, I mean,
and you don't want anybody to push back with you not being truthful.
Well, and I thought that the commentator did push back with Kamala.
Yeah, he did.
In terms of, I don't think she had so many statements that were not factual, but he pushed back when she maybe got into campaign speak instead of specific answers and pushed her to the point of making answers.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show. Hang on the phone line.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down. Slower.
iZurvey is proven to slow GA progression.
iZurvey gets GA
PA going slower.
Izervay or Avacin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Wasn't that a mighty storm, yeah? Wasn't that a mighty storm in the morning? Wasn't that a mighty storm, man? Blew all the people away. I was standing tight, sea wall, meant to keep the water down. Hot tide from the ocean, some water rolled over town. Wasn't that a mighty storm?
All right, welcome back. That's kind of catchy.
It is.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, who was that?
That was James Taylor. That was Mighty Storm. Music's all about storms.
Speaking of storms, let's do this. Before we go to the phone line. So the one thing we do know about the difference between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump is if she doesn't have to know every answer, she's going to surround herself with competent people, which is the way our system is set, of government is set up, right? You have all these people who are in different departments who will deal with different issues. It's never been about one person taking on the weight of the world's issues by themselves.
Well, certainly that would, I mean, definitely so. I mean, there's no one person who could possibly run something as complicated as the United States of America and all of its facets, right? I mean, the notion, I mean, what you can get is you can get direction. There's policies. You need, you know, there is, the buck does stop there. So that person has to be capable of making good decisions after being given all kinds of opinions and advice from
cabinet
cabinet and others, other experts, right?
Right.
But what you really hope for is a president who will surround themselves with a great deal of expertise. And she talks about her desire to have not only expertise, but competing notions, competing views. And, you know, being a lawyer myself, I understand the desirability of having competing views presented so that you can sift through that to try and make sure that what you don't do is head off in a direction that's based on bias instead of real facts. And, you know, I think that that's a very promising aspect of an administration of the sort that she would have. And I think it's, if I could look at a defect of the prior performance of her opponent during his 4 years in office, I would say a glaring defect was the failure to be surrounded by experts and the failure to have a reasoned, non-chaotic process for making decisions.
All right, let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. She avoids real interviews, kind of the way
Sandy, wait a minute. 60 minutes is not a real interview?
No, if you recall when Donald Trump did the Leslie Stahl interview and he brought up the 51 former justice officials that claimed that the Hunter Biden laptop was disinformation. Well, we didn't get an apology.
Well, wait. I'm sorry, but if you watch the beginning of the debate, the commentator said that the transcript revealed that she didn't say that.
Leslie Stahl argued with him that it was factual during the interview.
Okay.
So 60 Minutes, you should be a great interview. Right, Sandy? They claimed that it was false. The 51 officials claimed it was false. We now know that is not true.
Well, that isn't what Leslie Stahl. I'm just saying he wanted an apology from 60 Minutes, which is a goofy concept. What, he didn't get treated exactly as he wished? But he wanted an apology for something that wasn't said by Leslie Stahl. So, I mean, did she need to apologize about the 51 officials?
Now let's go to VP Harris.
Okay, we ducked that one,
that
didn't we?
That interview was disgusting because it was factually false.
What was factually false? Hey, CJ.
Song and dance all you want. The 60 Minutes was wrong, and Leslie Stahl was
okay,
wrong.
Okay, all right, CJ. This is all what you're doing now. You've called in what to sanctify the excuse that Donald Trump gave for not being on the show, because you started the statement by saying that we have a Vice President Harris presidential candidate who refuses to go on shows. She went on this show and was interviewed, wasn't she?
Yes, she was, and it was disgusting to see her claim to support Israel the way she did, not show up for Netanyahu's speech to Congress. She had a campaign issue. Really? She claims to support Israel.
So let me say this. I'm going to take the advice of one of the texters, Sandy, and he's right. Tony says, why are you getting into a fight with him over semantics? An argument that leads to nothing productive or about what government could be doing. Tony, thank you for bringing us back to reality. Thank you very much for the call, CJ. He's absolutely correct.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, if you want to duck the issue, this is a shiny object. This kind of argument is a shiny object argument. It distracts from reality.
Yeah. And so, again, Tony, thank you. It does not matter to say that 60 Minutes is, you know, not a reputable, you know, place for her to appear on is ridiculous. 855-752-4842 is Tuesday. It means my co-host Sandy Williams is here.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time, our friend Luke Mathers, for Tuesday Tangents with Luke, which will include a presidential visit from Joe Biden. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Greg Bach and meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, you ever name any of your vehicles?
I have a Jeep Wrangler right now, and I named it Natural Disaster.
I've been driving Wranglers for forever here.
All right, I'll just see you guys later.
Do you duck anybody?
I've got the duck it bucket in the back.
What
I'm ready to go.
Are you talking about? Hey, where are my Honda Insights at?
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning 6 until 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun.
It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.